Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them.
Introduces lawyer Hugh Scher, who's concluded the Onda versus Keys case at Supreme Court of Canada, and was seven judges disallowed and two judges dissented in the final verdict? Were there nine all told?
It was nine panel of the full court.
Yeah. So it was 7-2, not in your client's favor.
Clear as it was in our client's favor on the main issue, but not on some of the secondary issues.
Yeah, the secondary issues that were worth $500,000, yeah?
That's right.
Okay, well, welcome to the show. Okay. To me, and I'm by no means informed, and I've not done what I would call careful research in this case, but to me, I noticed when I read the judgment that the seven judges who struck down the punitive award and the two judges who felt that it was earned were almost in... Aside from the common ground of the severance payment, they were almost in total opposition about the facts, was the shocking thing to me.
That's absolutely correct, and it's amazing how, 13 judges can look at the same fact situation, and half of them can come to one view of it, and half of them can come to the other. It's just incredible.
It's probably inappropriate to question the judges' private lives, but do any of the judges have personal experience of disability?
I couldn't answer that. I don't know.
It's probably an appropriate question in any case. But it struck me that some of the judges seem to understand discrimination, and some of them... And this isn't... I'm not urging you to agree with me here, but I'm just telling you what I read, is that some of the judges seem to understand discrimination, and some of them seem to understand the burdens of disability, and some of them felt that there shouldn't be any special consideration given to someone with disabilities. It's like we all get stairs, and if you can't get up them, then that's your problem. There's nothing special about this.
Well, I don't think it's fair to attribute that view to the judges per se. I mean, some of the judges in the majority decision have actually written quite considerable equality rights decisions.
Have they?
Which are very favorable to people with disabilities. Rosalie Abella, for example, is well noted for her work in disability issues. She has extensive experience, probably more so than almost any judge in the country.
Well, there you go. You see, the only knowledge I have of them is this case, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, Rosalie Abella, for example, wrote the majority decision in the Via Rail case.
Oh!
So, I mean, she's run whole royal commissions on disability issues and policy in the past, and she was a provincial court judge. And so, no, she has extensive experience. She's written on it extensively. She's written decisions on it over the years, and she's usually quite sympathetic to these issues. But in this case, she seemed to, again, be bamboozled on the facts, as many judges were.
Yeah. To narrow the focus of my perception a little further, then, I also felt that the question of punitive damages, understandably, hinged on intent. And some people felt that Honda's actions didn't indicate an intent to harass Keys, and some of them felt that it did.
Yeah, and in fairness, the person who's in the best position to make that determination is the only person who heard all of the 30 days worth of evidence and was able to assess Honda's witnesses firsthand, hear them, assess their demeanor, assess their credibility, and that person's the trial judge. And the trial judge, of course, heard 30 days of evidence, came to a considered opinion as to what he felt Honda's intent was and how they went about doing it in terms of intimidating and terminating Mr. Keys in order to defeat their obligations to accommodate him under human rights law.
Yeah.
And for the Supreme Court of Canada, of course, that decision was upheld by unanimous Court of Appeal. And for the Supreme Court of Canada, in retrospect, 8 years later, to look back and say, well, we can't see that same intent. It's just not their role to be doing that. They're not supposed to be as an appellate. And their own case law says that that's not their role.
They're not to retry the case.
They're not supposed to retry the case. They're not even supposed to second-guess the weight attributed to the evidence by the trial judge. What they are supposed to assess is whether or not there was any evidence at all to support the trial judge's conclusions. Yeah. And by virtue of the fact that at least two judges on the court found that clearly there was, and three judges on the Court of Appeal clearly found that there was, obviously there was ample support for what the trial judge found by way of the evidence, and so they should not have interfered with his findings of fact.
Okay. Now, when you use the term the trial judge, you're talking about the original.
Well, that's the judge that heard 30 days of evidence, had the entire transcript of evidence before him when he wrote his decision, and in that respect, his opinion ought to be given great deference according to the Supreme Court's own case law.
I see. Where do you see the difference between the dissenting judges and the judges who struck down the punitive award?
Well, the primary difference is that the dissenting judges accepted the Supreme Court's previous law about the fact that appellate judges are not supposed to second-guess the weight to be given to evidence. They're not supposed to second-guess the trial judge's assessments of credibility. They are there to assess whether or not there's a basis for the conclusions reached by the judge, and if that's the case, then they are to leave the factual findings alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the two judges, and they made it very clear in their reasoning, that they wanted to make a clear message that this is not what appellate courts should be doing, appellate court judges should be doing. And the Supreme Court has said that repeatedly, and yet here they've gone out, basically retry the case without the benefit of hearing any evidence. And that's clearly contrary to their own directions that they give to other appellate judges.
I see. So this is kind of an inexplicable straying from their own rulings, then.
Well, I mean, I won't say it's the first time they've done it, but
it's
clearly contrary to what they say appeal court judges should do.
Okay. And I guess because they're the Supreme Court, there's nobody to...
Well, you know, since about 1953, we've lost our right of appeal to the Privy Council in England. So.
Oh. Okay. I didn't know we ever had it.
Yeah, we did it one time.
Okay. All right.
Probably to address findings such as this case.
Yeah, I suppose you would. It would be, you know, at that stage, this is 1, 2, 3 stages of appeal.
Yeah.
They would only be on facts of on matters of procedure, probably.
And matters of law, one would think. Yeah.
Yeah.
This old boy lived down the road from me. Used to drive a beat-up Dodge. Well, he showed up drunk as hell one night, parked in my garage. I had to ask him how to get so lost, but you can't find your way home. He said, I've been running around in circles so long, I didn't know where else to go. I've been running around in circles so long, I didn't know where else to go. See, his wife, she left him, took the kids, and he never was the same. I guess they were all that he'd been living for, and he shouldered all the blame. They always wondered what made her give up. God, if he'd only known. She'd been running around in circles. She didn't know where else to go. She'd been running around in circles so long. She didn't know where else to go. This old boy lived down the road from me. Today they laid him in the ground. He drove that old Dodge right off the river bridge without even slowing down. And he left a letter he wrote to his old man. Said, I just lost control, and I've been running around in circles so long, I didn't know where else to go. And I've been running around in circles so long. I didn't know where else to go.
That was Eric Bibb and Circles. Now back to the interview. You've been listening to employment and litigation lawyer Hugh Scher discuss the conclusion of the landmark case. You've been listening to employment and litigation lawyer Hugh Scher discuss the conclusion of the landmark case, Honda versus Keys, in which Honda employee Kevin Keys, with chronic fatigue syndrome, was harassed by his employers in the opinion of two judges on the Supreme Court, but lost the case for damages in the opinion of the remaining seven on the court.
I was disturbed to read in the judgment one of the judges said that we have an existing procedure for dealing with discrimination. It's quite clear, and it doesn't permit civil suits, and it's the Ontario Human Rights Commission. And I thought, oh my God, we've been trying to fix the Ontario Human Rights Commission for how many decades now?
And that's very true.
What?
But of course, the difficulty with that is that the government has just changed that law, so that as of July 1st of this year. The Human Rights Code now is allowed to be interpreted and applied by courts. So the court's decision on that respect is totally out of date as of the 1st of July. 3 days after the judgment was rendered, the law changed to basically allow courts to do what we were asking them to do. So for the court to somehow try to entrench back into this Pandora's box, in my view, is an artificial
distinction.
I mean, first of all, it doesn't mean anything in Ontario anymore because the legislature has now changed that. I think the court had an opportunity to put human rights first in this country.
Yeah.
This country claims itself to be a bastion for human rights protections and enforcement and civil justice, and the court had an opportunity to proclaim the importance of human rights to ensure that they had the highest protection under Canadian law, and the court shirked that responsibility in this case, in my view.
Yeah. So if you had to try this case again today, the objection that Ontario human rights law precluded civil damages wouldn't fly?
No.
Okay.
But it didn't fly under the old law either, as you saw from the fact that the trial court and the Court of Appeal upheld the awards, and the awards were upheld based on a previous statement by the Supreme Court of Canada, where Justice Iacobucci of the Supreme Court, in a case called McKinley, held that punitive damages could be based on discrimination. So they basically overturned their own statement.
I see.
I mean, it's just, it's almost like, yeah, what can I say? The justice is like hitting a moving target.
Yeah. Iacobucci's retired, right?
He has.
Yeah, okay.
He was one of the more thoughtful judges in the area of employment and human rights law and contracts. So.
Yeah.
Wrote some of the leading decisions in that, including one decision which the court has now, in this case, basically entirely revisited. The Wallace case, which basically held that where employers acted in bad faith in the manner of termination, that courts would be able to redress that by an increase in the notice period when making employment law awards without the need to assess specific harm and damage to the individual. What the court has now said is, no, we're no longer going to do that, but what we are going to allow is for damages for bad faith in the manner of termination, provided that the person can prove that. So now employees are going to have to bring medical evidence for each trial to demonstrate that they've suffered mental distress as a consequence of the way they were treated in the manner of termination.
Oh, dear.
It's going to create for courts a whole bunch of artificial barriers.
And expenses.
The harm done. Increase the cost, but artificial barriers to assess the harm done make trials more complex, more expensive, and at the end of the day, diminish justice, in my view.
So, they actually cut Key's severance back from 24 months to 15 again.
Well, again, they found that there wasn't bad faith in the manner of termination. Some of the judges did. Some of them found that there was. And again, the fact that there's such a distinction on the facts really calls into question. You know, again, the role of the court of appeal and the Supreme Court to be second guessing trial judges' facts.
Yeah.
As they've done here.
Yeah, but to get the picture straight on the folding green, did Keyes, besides the punitive damages, also lose the 9-month extension of his severance?
Yes, that's right.
Oh.
So all he got was 15 months of notice.
I see.
Which is hardly a fair resolution to somebody who's been put through as much bad faith and discriminatory conduct as he was.
Well, yeah, and I didn't see any recognition that any of the judges understood that Mr. Keyes will have a hard time working again. Number one, because of his disability, which is well known now, and couldn't be hidden in any case. But number two, because his disability's gotten worse as a result of the handling of this case and its dismissal. So, you know, further discrimination and further disadvantage, and nobody seemed, well, I won't say nobody, but the judgment didn't seem to reflect that.
No, it really didn't. There seems to be a pendulum shift at the court away from, you know, sort of employee perspective and employee rights, more towards and in favor of employers and their rights and responsibilities. And maybe it's because we're into a recession that the courts want to give employers more flexibility.
I wondered about that, yeah.
I'm not kidding about it. I'm quite serious about it.
Yeah, well, I'm told by reputation, I won't ask you to agree with this, but I'm told by reputation the Supreme Court is a very political court.
So
it doesn't surprise me personally that their ruling would have a political slant to it.
Well, I mean, their whole purpose is to establish national policy. That's why they grant leave in cases. They're not there really to just deal with appeals as a general rule. They're there to set precedents on matters of national interest and national importance. So,
yeah, I see. Okay.
I think in this case they've got it wrong. I think they've gone the wrong way, but time will tell.
Yeah, when you say time will tell, how long... Is this potentially a stumbling block only as long as it takes to bring the next case like this? Or is this a stumbling block until there's a change in the Supreme Court judges sitting? Or is this a precedent that's going to echo for decades down through case decisions?
Well, I don't know the answer to that entirely, but what I do know is that there will be a lot of creative and inventive employment law lawyers that are going to be pushing envelopes and trying to get trial judges to recognize the harms done to employees where they're badly treated by employers, and to find new ways of doing it, whether it's through the development of tort law, through the development of torts like negligent investigations of complaints, or through the negligent infliction of mental suffering, or through various other means of action. The courts will eventually, I think, expand and evolve the law so as to provide greater protections, and then it will eventually come up to the Supreme Court of Canada, which will have another chance to decide. which direction it's going to go, and it hasn't always, of course, gone in this kind of a direction.
No.
In fact, I think many are surprised that this is the direction that the court took.
Yeah. Well, I certainly was, but I'm no lawyer. Well, what did you think of the dissenting judge's opinions? Obviously, you thought that it was more in keeping with the Supreme Court's role. What did you think of their willingness to credit the trial judge's assessment and the pattern of declining approval as you go through the appeal courts? You know, the first award of $500,000 and the second award of $100,000 and the third award of no punitive, severance only.
Well, I think what it reflects to some extent is a real abhorrence for punitive damages in this country.
Uh-huh.
In the United States, we see a lot more awards of punitive damages in this country. Punitive damages generally are extraordinarily rare.
Uh-huh.
Punitive damages in the range that we obtained at trial in this case, and this was the third largest punitive damage award ever in Canadian history.
Oh, really?
And the largest ever employment law award of punitive damages in Canadian history.
Really?
At this point, there's only been two amounts of punitive damages larger. There was one case the Supreme Court upheld at $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one that they upheld at $850,000.
I see. $500,000
would have been the third largest. So.
Yeah.
And the first case involved an arson insurance case with bad faith by the insurance company, basically.
Oh, I recall reading something about that, too, yeah.
And the other case involved a significant case of defamation against the provincial crown attorney in Ontario by the Church of Scientology. So,
okay.
So it was, and this case was, right up there in terms of the quantum, the amount of the damages. And the courts, I think, are just very reticent and concerned about opening up this door to punitive damages. And I think that's unfortunate because there is a valid role for punitive damages as a matter of, keeping corporations in line as a matter of civil law,
mm-hmm.
Because, frankly, how else can a country do it? If there isn't a way to show one's disapproval through the courts, then how is a corporation to learn that certain kinds of conduct, bad faith, discrimination, and literally intentional efforts to harm people is something that just isn't going to be tolerated? And they and other corporations need to understand it.
So for a complainant who wants to bring such a case or a lawyer who's considering representing such a case, what from your perspective, would you have to say to them about what could be done now?
Think twice.
Yeah.
More importantly, I think, you need to assess each case on its own merits.
Yeah.
You need to look at the law as it is and the facts as they are and try to put forward the best possible argument as to why the damages that should be granted are ones that reflect the harm done and the conduct of the employer and the circumstances. And I think, I think lawyers will continue to do that. I will continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll continue to push the envelope where I feel that the case warrants it. And the courts will, evolve over time or not.
Mm-hmm.
But, in my view, that's what the justice system is there to provide for. And, Certainly, a lot of good, I think, was done by this case over the years. I think a lot of employers have taken a lot of lessons from the fact that the courts have been willing to grant such large awards, and I think that's made a lot of employers stop and think before they've engaged in sort of bad faith or egregious discrimination against employees. And I'm hopeful that that lesson will continue despite this decision of the Supreme Court of Canada, and that's, again, something I'm going to be vigilant about maintaining for other employees.
Mm-hmm.
And even for the employers I represent, I'm going to be vigilant in terms of making sure that their policies and practices reflect my view of what the common law and the human rights law in this country requires of them.
I think there were a lot of corporate law firms doing very close analysis of your case and your argument. I came across a lot of that on the web. There wasn't any shortage of analysis from the corporate point of view. So you're right about corporate observation of what you've done. What haven't we said about this unfortunate decision? And I don't want to play up the human interest angle either, but its consequences for you and for Kevin Keyes.
Well, the court continuously talks about creating additional access to justice for people in this country.
Yeah.
And then it goes out and makes decisions like this, and it goes out and makes decisions like Walker and Ritchie, which basically, take away possible compensation for lawyers that take on these kinds of cases with significant risk of non-payment, and because the plaintiffs are impecunious and unable to go to court otherwise. So, I mean, I think, you know, if this country is serious with access to justice, then our Supreme Court and our politicians have to actually do something about it to promote greater access, greater equality, and greater capability for lawyers to move these things forward. Because otherwise, to simply pay it lip service and make the grand statements but not do anything to make it happen, in my view, is just a travesty.
Yeah.
And it's contrary to the principles of fundamental justice that we supposedly hold dear in this country.
Yeah.
And I think our Supreme Court should start to put its money where its mouth is.
Yeah, okay. Can't be clearer than that. Anything else you want to say?
I'm pleased to talk about this case. There will be other cases, and for those employees who are, harassed and discriminated against and simply treated in an egregiously bad faith way, there are means to address those kinds of issues, and they should be vigilant about enforcing their rights.
Yeah, by whatever legal means they can, I guess.
That's right.
Yep. Okay. Appreciate your time, Hugh, and sorry that it came to this end. I'm glad that you were able to give us some clarity on the effect of this ruling and in the future for people who want to plead this argument.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, good. Thanks, Hugh.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to employment and litigation lawyer Hugh Scheer discuss the conclusion of the landmark case, Honda versus Keyes, in which Honda employee Kevin Keyes, with chronic fatigue syndrome, was harassed by his employers, in the opinion of two judges on the Supreme Court, but lost the case for damages in the opinion of the remaining seven on the court.
To fight. Yeah, my rent's overdue. Now my landlord's fit to fight. I'm not too concerned. My new shoes fit just right. If my landlord evicts me, I won't break down and cry. I'll just keep on walking with my head up in the sky. New shoes shining with the buckles on the side. Best fit I ever had. Not too tight and not too wide. Walking
on a cloud. Oh, with my new buckle shoe, I'm dancing, you know I'm proud. Make a hard-working man like me stand out in any crowd.
That was Eric Bibb. Can you guess the title? New Shoes. And now, in the clipping file, in the Star, Wednesday last week, Drug Move Endangers Seniors, lawyer says. Decision to limit pill packs could push seniors into homes, province warned. Benefits of pill packs far exceed costs to the province, advocates argue. Pill packs currently aren't covered under the Ontario Drug Plan. However, until a dispute with North York pharmacist Chaim Reitman over billings, Ontario routinely paid the $8 per pack dispensing charge. Reitman's business includes a high percentage of older people living on their own and using daily and weekly pill packs. Reitman said the changes will put him out of business. Well, Helen Stevenson, executive officer for the ministry's Ontario Public Drugs Program, said she can't comment on a case before the courts. Lawyer Ron Marzell said the province effectively sidestepped the issue. And from the Globe and Mail today, did you notice Tony Clement making a statement that he views the Vancouver injection site for people with AIDS insight as an addition to addiction rather than an aid to addiction, which astonished the World Health Organization and AIDS activists. Clement also said that the federal government supports various forms of harm reduction for intravenous drug users, such as needle exchange, methadone treatment, and rehabilitation, but rejected safe injection as illegitimate. Mr. Clement has never clearly stated why government supports needle exchange and rehab programs, but so sternly opposes the existence of a facility where drug users can actually use the safe needles and be encouraged to enter rehab. The sticking point appears to be that at Insight, drug users cannot be arrested and prosecuted. Insight opened as a pilot project in 2003 under a special exemption from federal drug laws, but Ottawa had refused to say whether it would extend the exemption when it expired in June. Before the deadline arrived, the BC Supreme Court ruled that parts of federal drug laws related to trafficking possession are unconstitutional and gave the government a year to rewrite them. Mr. Justice Ian Pitfield said laws that prevent people suffering from the disease of addiction from accessing such a service infringe on their right to life, liberty, and security of the person. Mr. Clement said Ottawa will appeal the decision, meaning the fate of Insight will likely be decided by the Supreme Court of Canada. We've been waiting for some time for the Conservatives to come out of the closet before the anticipated election, and this is the first step. In the Star, AIDS group presses Clement on funding gap. A small coalition of Canadian AIDS groups met Health Minister Tony Clement in Mexico City about what they feel is a nearly $11.8 million funding shortfall for AIDS programs and the failure of legislation intended to send cheaply priced medication to countries in need. AIDS activists say they're $11.8 million short in the federal initiative on AIDS for this year. The network was one of about 10 national groups meeting Clement at the 17th International AIDS Conference in Mexico, where 25,000 delegates have gathered from around the world. This money was redirected to the HIV-AIDS Vaccine Initiative, said Richard Elliott, executive director of the Canadian HIV-AIDS Legal Network. but activists feel money shouldn't be taken out of one AIDS initiative to pay for another. The lack of cash affects the AIDS Community Action Program, federal funding for regional programs in the frontline fight, such as prevention and safe sex education against AIDS. AIDS sufferers unjustly denied transplants, activists say, by Andre Picard, The Globe and Mail. There are an estimated 58,000 Canadians living with HIV/AIDS. Close to a third are also infected with hepatitis, which can cause liver disease. Curtis Cooper, a physician, estimates that about 50 patients co-infected with HIV and the hepatitis C virus require a liver transplant, and a lesser number require kidney transplants. Gregory Robinson, a retired Toronto physician, is one of them. He noted that advances in the treatment of HIV/AIDS have resulted in the disease being well controlled, but the same cannot be said of hepatitis C, which is destroying his liver. Louise Binder, chairwoman of the Canadian Treatment Action Council, said patients like Dr. Robinson are being discriminated against because of their HIV status based on specious arguments like a shortage of organs and fears that surgeons will be infected during surgery. It's true, she said, that organs for transplant are in short supply, but nonetheless, those with HIV, Hep C, or B can be equally good candidates. Ms. Binder said, fear of contracting HIV/AIDS is not valid because surgeons take precautions with all patients, and those with HIV/AIDS who would benefit from a transplant would almost certainly be taking medications that leave them with such a low viral load they are virtually non-infectious. Hepatitis viruses are also far more infectious, and surgeons routinely operate on patients with hepatitis, she said. And again from the Star, report issues SOS for Legal Aid System. Legal insurance scheme, a promising direction to help access justice. When his new house accidentally caught fire, William Koenig, who works at Brampton's Chrysler plant, relied on his union's insurance program to launch a civil lawsuit against his cable TV company, whose installer had apparently hidden electrical wire igniting flames. If I had to pay a lawyer, it would probably not have been feasible, Koenig said in the plant's Brampton office. Koenig is surprised similar programs aren't more widely available. If you can have a plan where you can buy coverage for your pet for medical care, why isn't there a plan you can buy like this? Said lawyer Wendy Napier, who manages the Brampton office for the CAW. We're Canadians. I don't understand why we don't have this legal insurance. We have universal health care, said Koenig. We need another Tommy Douglas. If you want to hear any of these topics on disrespect, email us at dialogue, D-I-A-L-O-G, dialogue at inbox.com. Now for our weekly conversation with blind immigrant in sanctuary awaiting approval of his second immigration application in Montreal, Cater Balloony.
Hey, Joe, are you First Nation?
No, why?
No, I asked you.
No, I have a disability. It's invisible.
No, I said, are you from,
Native.
Native, yeah.
No, I'm from that other group, that group of people with disabilities. In Canada, they're all protected, supposedly, against discrimination. The problem is, up until now, if you went to court over discrimination, the court wouldn't give you much money. Now things have changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the States where you go and you get a huge amount of money because somebody wasn't nice to you. You know, that doesn't happen in Canada.
No.
Yeah, your coffee was too hot. Here's $1 million, you know?
Yeah. And you're worse.
Well, I wish, you know, when somebody says, you know, I can't hire you, you're disabled, you know, or somebody says, you know, you don't deserve what you have because you're disabled, so I'm going to take it from you. It would be nice if you could go to court and get a lot of money, but you can't.
You can't. In that stage, man.
Yeah.
Can't make easy money. Easy money, like, everybody be careful.
Yeah, everybody be careful.
Don't hurt, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get on the bus. Okay, we'll tell the whole city, all 10 million people, that the transit system has to be changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Canada, we'll give you a few buses of your own that you can get on. It's true, you know. Yeah, it's a funny place. did I tell you this? Somebody asked me, I remarked to someone, I said, you know, next, I was looking at the calendar, and next year my show falls on Canada Day. I think I did tell you this. Next year my show falls on Canada Day, so I have a whole year to work on a Canada Day show, now that I know. And he said, are you going to, yeah, I did tell you this, I remember. He says, are you going to diss Canada? Are you going to disrespect Canada?
Yeah.
I said, well, sure. I said, well, that's the name of the show, you know. I said, but...
This is Canada.
Yeah, yeah. I said, but, you know, if it were really bad, you know, like Bosnia or something, or Darfur, then we wouldn't be here, right? So since we are still here, there has to be some good, too, in the show.
Oh.
How you making out? What's it like there, weather-wise?
Huh?
What's the weather like?
Oh, no idea.
Is it hot?
I don't know. I'm not wet outside. But it's somebody told me it's cloudy.
Oh, it's cloudy here, too. It must be a big cloud.
Yeah.
That's your basic 600-mile cloud, Carter.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's what he said to me. It's cloudy, and I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I was talking to him, and he said it's cloudy. I don't know.
Yeah.
No idea.
Okay.
Yeah, but I feel like I don't care.
Okay. Another one of those, eh?
Yeah. For me, I hope the summer came late. It come late.
So you have some left when you get your approval.
When I got my spots, I'll be outside.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be good days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
For me, it doesn't make any difference now.
Otherwise, we'll have to get you some snowshoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Winter in Montreal.
Yeah, man, I can't take it. It's heavy.
You what? Can't be happy?
No, I mean, the shoes, it's very heavy. Snowshoes.
Are they?
Yeah, it's very heavy for me.
Oh, yeah. I've never...
Because, like almost 3 years, I have only, like, sandal.
Oh, yes, okay.
After I wanted to take, like, a boot, it was something like it's very heavy.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say, well, you think the boot. Snowshoes. Snowshoes. It's like you walk on top of the snow. Everybody else sinks in, you walk on top. Yeah. So I have to get you a pair of snowshoes.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I'm thinking about the boot.
Yeah, for sure. Man. Well, yeah, good idea. Yeah. Yeah. Could you wear, you'd have to wear boots, too. Could you wear snowshoes? You couldn't, could you?
No, I never had.
No, but I mean, balance and all that. Would you be able to?
Yeah.
You would be able to wear snowshoes and walk on top of the snow, even if it's not flat.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay. Good.
I don't think so.
Yeah? Okay.
Good idea.
Well, it's a thought.
I don't know.
You'd be the only one, but it's a thought. People would be jealous. You'd walk right past them, you know? They're walking in snow up to their knees, and you're walking up about a foot and a half higher than they are. And you just go right by. Yeah.
You think your feet doesn't go inside too when you took snowshoes? Your feet doesn't go inside too?
No.
Why nobody use it here in Canada?
That's a good question. We'll put it on the show and we'll ask. I'm sure people will like to think about that one. I don't know why they don't do it. It's a good idea.
Maybe it's not...
fashionable?
Maybe it's not fashion.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Or maybe it's not hot.
It's not what?
It's not hot, it's not warm.
Well, snowshoes work best when it's cold, you know?
Huh?
Snowshoes work best when it's cold.
Yeah?
Yeah, but when there's snow, you know? So, people wear snowshoes up north where the snow is like 6 feet deep or 10 feet deep. You can't fall into the snow or you never come out. So they wear snowshoes, you know?
I don't know how much it costs.
No, well, they're probably not cheap.
Huh?
They're probably not cheap. You want me to find out on the web while we are here?
Where?
Okay. All right. Hang on. We will go and look. What are we going to talk about while I'm looking?
It's a good idea. Believe me. I love the idea if my feet doesn't go into the... No.
All right. Budget-friendly snowshoes. Bigfootsnowshoes.com. There you go. Let's take a look. Budget-friendly snowshoes. So this means inexpensive. Oh, my goodness. Wow, these are more like they're more like little skis. They're not flat though. Let's see, snowshoes. Wow, this is something else. Adventure sport snowshoes, $69.99. Powder pro, and these don't look funny either. Not really.
Huh?
No more than boots. Yeah. Well, they have a little frame around them, right? And, but that. Yeah, these are for the sport of snowshoeing. There's a sport, snowshoeing. I didn't know that. So $69.99 they start.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you the, I will send you the link, okay?
Yeah.
All right. And there are a whole bunch of links, so maybe you want more than one link. Why don't I send you the Google link, and then you can click on all the sites that I found.
Yeah.
Okay.
It sounds like it's like good ones.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Huh.
We'll find out. Isn't that funny? I thought it was a joke, you know, but no, it's not. They're not. You'll have to have someone else tell you what they look like, but they're not ugly.
They're not. Look ugly, yeah?
No. So, what else is new?
The new is coming on the 9th and the 10th big event we have.
The 9th or 10th of August?
Yeah.
What's happening?
We have art. You know, the artist of Montreal, many artists of Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want to do like a mural. And I don't know how many, 20 artists are going to be here and in the backyard and do something. And we're done, like, communicate the press, press release.
Okay, so it's an art happening.
It's going to be happening, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to show me the support? Yeah.
Okay.
And do you want to talk to media about that? I don't know. It's very big stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to play this under 10. I want to play music.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I want to play music. I want and some artists do want to do something too.
Who's organizing it? You?
No.
Oh,
it's the artists.
Okay. And are they going to do it at the church?
In the backyard.
Very good. Your place has become a meeting place for artists. So.
Oh yeah.
So when you do get it, when you do get accepted, your apartment will be the same kind of meeting place if you have any kind of yard.
Yeah, of course, it's gonna be like that's.
You're gonna be a Canadian icon. You're gonna be more Canadian than me. This is great. It's true.
Oh, I try to do many things, Jeff. I want to do many things, and I'm good organizer too. Okay.
Yeah.
I have good relationship with everybody, and I have no problems with anybody. And
wow.
Yeah, I think I would be like. Yeah. I'm think like I'm more. How can I say? You know, like everybody look to me. And everybody want to do something with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows want to do something with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything going to be good.
Okay.
Yeah. And I hope everybody going to, like, I hope, like, and the 9 to 10, I have, like, many, like, person going to be show up today. It's already in the news. Already in the paper news.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. You have a talent for organization, it's true.
Yeah, but like...
And you have help.
Yeah, and like everything when you said for color, everybody won't be here. That's the problem.
That's great.
Yeah, the one you said this for color, do you know what some organizations told me, color, we hope just like... We need you when you go out from here because like well everything everybody wants to say for color we said oh yes I gonna be there
yeah
you know and they said like and because I have good relationship you know with everybody and it's gonna be a big event and this event I hope this is the last event. I want to do it here. And after that, I have to go. Maybe I wait just immigration to give me my status. I go back.
Yeah.
I can't do anything after, but I'm the church. I'm going to be the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, you hope so, eh?
Yeah, I hope so, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'd like to come to that first one. That would be that's going to be a hell of a party, you know.
Yeah. That's true. When I go back to my apartment, that means something else, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe you can get a ground floor apartment with a little yard outside, or even a.
My apartment anyway, it's big.
Yeah, always big, eh?
Yeah, it's big. But now I'm thinking to clean my apartment. That's once my friend he was living there, but he left.
Mm-hmm.
he said to me, the apartment has bed bugs.
Your apartment?
Yeah.
Your old one?
Yeah, my old one.
Well, they all have bed bugs right now, unless you're in a very small building that hasn't been affected. So, it's like I don't have bed bugs, but we live above the office, and there's only three apartments in the building. Yeah. So yeah. We're lucky. But where I used to live, they have bed bugs now.
I have to put a hole, I want to throw out whole my furniture.
Throw it out?
Yeah.
You mean all the upholstered furniture?
Yeah.
Not the hard stuff?
I don't know.
Not the tables. I had to do the same thing. I had mold. I had to throw out the city of Hamilton. When they wouldn't address the mold in my apartment, I had to throw out my sofa, my chair, my bed. Yeah.
Yeah, the sofa, you have to. The sofa, everything with the soft.
Yeah.
Sofa, you have to put it on the garbage.
Yeah. And I didn't appreciate it. The city didn't want to help me out.
Yeah?
Yeah. So
did they help you?
No. Well, they had a little paper pamphlet from another organization, and they said, we will do what is in the paper pamphlet, but we don't understand your problem, and we don't want to do anything else. And so if you don't like what we want to do, you can leave. So I left, and I got a new sofa, and I couldn't afford everything all at once. So I got a new sofa, a new table, and I moved into a much smaller apartment that wouldn't need so much furniture. And, of course, I had to... the apartment where I lived, the city paid part of the rent. And the new apartment, nobody pays but me. So it has to be smaller to be able for me to afford it. But it's nice. It's secure. We don't have theft problems. We don't have abuse problems. We have, it's just the three of us. So, we run it together, and it works pretty well. But, yeah, it's not a bad deal. He says he's going to put a new roof on it this fall. And that would be nice. Yeah, because if you don't put a roof on, there's water, there's mold, and all that stuff.
That's why, friend told me, I have to throw out everything in the garbage, and it's gonna be the apartment clean. I have to paint in the whole apartment, and I have to call a professional to put the powder in.
Yeah.
And keep it closed for maybe a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. After it's gonna be very cleaned up.
Yeah. That's expensive for you, though, eh? We'll have to have a drive for furniture for Cutter.
Yeah, but, I have to find somebody to help me. I can't do that now by myself. For money, I don't have money.
Yeah.
I have any income now.
Be glad you weren't there when the bedbugs came, eh? So you have no income, so you need some money coming in. But you need more than money coming in. You need a bunch of money all at once, or a bunch of furniture all at once.
Yeah, I have to ask some organization to help me for furniture, because I can't. I don't have money. But anyway, I have work.
I have work.
I'm spoiled.
I don't think so.
I'm a very spoiled person.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but we started with the government, but... It's not with Immigration Canada. I'm a spoiled person. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
When I ask, also sometimes I find.
Good. Okay. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
Any progress with arranging the new CD?
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, I did one big melody. Now I have to. I have to practice a lot.
Oh.
For 10. Yeah. Find me, I want to practice now, because I have to.
Yeah.
I have to do two songs, and,
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you want to perform them?
Yeah, I want to perform, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like I said, I want to do slam music, slam poetry.
Yeah. Anything else happening we should know about?
No, some funny thing happened.
Okay. You always have.
We hope gonna be get my answer. Maybe I don't know. I wish for answer.
Yeah, yeah. Did your lawyer say when?
No,
you have no idea when.
He can't say.
It's a government. Yeah.
Yeah.
What
can
you say?
No, he can't say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad to have talked to you today on this holiday. It's a holiday everywhere, right? Is it a holiday in Montreal? Does everybody take the day off today?
I don't know.
No, oh, okay.
It's a holiday today?
In Ontario, it's a holiday, yeah.
It's for what?
It's changed. Now there's a lot of recognition that maybe it should be named after the founder of Ontario, John Graves Simcoe. who came here from England, oh,
I don't know.
200 years ago?
Yeah, I'm out of the scene. Okay, honestly, I have no idea.
Yeah, I should have looked it up before I called you. Well, okay. Yeah,
anyway, it's not big.
Okay, yeah, I know. Every day for you is a holiday.
For me, it's the same. 7 days, same. It's some nights, some days, some hours. Some, no, I have no.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We know that. I'm glad you said, I'm glad you said that. People forget, you know.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have like nearly 1,000 days. It's another thing to have nearly 1,000 days the same.
Yeah.
This is not so easy. All right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, keep spirits up. We'll talk to you next Monday, and you can call me in the meantime.
Perfect.
If something big happens.
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect. Take
All right.
care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And to take us out, Cab Mo, Just Like You.
Hello, my friend, it's me. All our old clothes are back in style. We went our separate ways, only to return to face a lesson we failed to learn. We didn't understand the truth. We're blinded by the eyes of you. Time kept on moving, and a change has come. And you think that I don't know where you're coming from. Well, I feel just like you, and I cry just like. But I heal just like you. And under my skin, I'm just like you. You gave your love and your innocence,
and they took away your confidence. Put your arms around me, I am your friend.
'Cause I feel just like you, and I cry just like you. But I hear just like you. And under my skin, I'm just like you and everybody else. When I get hurt, I cry for help. And I've got secrets that God only knows. And God knows I feel just like you. And I cry just like you. I heal just like you. And I break down just like you. I feel just like you. When I cry just like you, but I'm weak just like you. And under my skin, I'm just like you.
Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number 4, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.